Welcome to the Cloud Pod, where the forecast is always cloudy. We talk weekly about all things AWS, GCP, and Azure. We are your hosts,
Justin,
Jonathan,
Ryan,
and Peter.
Episode 186, recorded for the week of October 19th and 26th. Google Cloud Next, more like Google Cloud Past. Good evening, guys. I don't think I know you guys. It's been so long. You guys are the hosts of the show? It's great.
It hasn't been that long.
Yeah. I just started hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, you guys did do a show. I was gone. So yeah, you guys seen each other at least more than I've seen you. Because we said we were going to take a week vacation, and then that turned into 2 weeks because, as a tradition of coming back from vacation, that week was just not going to happen. I was busy. And everyone else is busy too. And so, Peter on planes, me in there. So we said, let's just take 2 weeks. And so now we're back, but we're back with a massive show because in our absence, Google Next happened, Azure Ignite happened, Oracle Cloud World happened. So, I give you all kudos for the great show you guys did while I was gone. But we got a lot of show to get to. So
I was going to ask you if you listened to it or not. Certainly the guy who we pay to edit the show listened to it and said it was good. So
I did listen to it. I listened to it in preparation for recording last week that didn't happen. And I thought it was good too. Yeah, you guys did a great job. And then you posted to the notes like, oh, this is the way you should do the show from forever. And I was like, I don't know what they changed because it sounded exactly the same on the recording. So I was like, well, I don't know what, maybe Jonathan will fill me in later, but we're here just doing my way. So if you like Jonathan's way better, you just let us know and we'll do Jonathan. We can be the host from now on. How's that?
You see the line spacing on the show notes is 1.1 instead of 1.2. It's completely revolutionary to how we manage the show.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get it. All right. Well, let's get into it. So again, we're covering 2 weeks here because we have Google Cloud Next and a bunch of stuff. So we're going to cover AWS and Azure this week, which we weren't originally planning to do. And so let's get to it. Amazon EC2 Trainium 1 instances, or the TRN 1 instances for high performance model training, are now available and generally available. These new instances are well suited for large scale distributed training of complex deep learning models across a broad set of applications such as natural language processing, image recognition, and much more. I could bore you with a bunch to talk about teraflops and how many times faster it is than old P4D instances, but I would just bore you all to tears. But they did announce that the TRN1 EC2 instances integrate with FSx for Lustre, creating a high-performance storage, and are deployed in EC2 Ultra Clusters, that's pretty badass. Ultra Clusters are interconnected with non-blocking petabit-scale network, giving you on-demand to a supercomputer to cut model training time for large and complex models from months to weeks or even days, I'm sure for only the cost of a small Volkswagen Passat.
That's all right. Better than nothing.
Yeah, but it is pretty slick. I mean, getting that level of storage throughput on the back end is pretty amazing. And, having done large storage at scale, this is the hardest part of that. Making it consistent and reliable, it's very amazing.
That's the kind of ultra that I like, though. I like ultra clusters. It's much better than, ultra firewalls and ultra storage. So I'll take it any day of the week.
Yeah.
Reinvent prediction then. Ultra premium.
Yeah. If it were Azure, maybe.
If it's Azure, maybe. Well, if you are in Taipei, Taiwan, or Delhi, India, there's new local zones for you. These local zones are tied to the Tokyo parent, and the Delhi is tied to Mumbai parent zones. Interesting, in this particular article, Jeff Barr highlighted a couple of use cases. One that jumped out to me was Riot Games, an American video game developer, publisher, and entertainment company based in LA, uses local zones, and their games deliver an optimal player experience through ultra low latency for their multiplayer online battle arena, League of Legends, and their first person tactical shooter, Valorant, by deploying their games into local zones. Riot is able to serve players at low latency without the need for operating on premises compute. So there you go, a use case for local zones.
Yeah. And it was the one we thought it was going to be, which is
video games. Yeah. First-person shooter.
It's always gaming. Low latency, it's always gaming.
Making money, yeah.
Yeah. Fair point.
So if you're next up at Local Zones, we do have a new Cost Explorer console. The new Cost Explorer console is not enabled by default. I had to go play with it today, and I had to go find the banner at the top that says, hit this button to try the new console. So do that. And then there's a new summary widget, which provides an at-a-glance view of the total and average monthly cost. as well as customers can also look up specific spend and usage information using the new search function, which there's been many a time where I'm just like, I just want to find the EC2 cost, or I just want to find this one thing and I wanted to search for it. So overall, that's a pretty great capability. I did use it today, as I mentioned. One of the things I noticed is that I can save my report to a library. That might have existed before, but I don't know if it did, or it was very hard to discover previously. But now it's right there, save report to library. And I assume by the fact they're calling it a library, eventually I'll be able to save those reports to other people in my company, which is pretty nice. And that search capability is quite great. I just wish they would continue to break down EC2 other into something I could actually understand. but that's not a tool console issue as much as a larger billing problem of EC2 in general.
Was it in dark mode, though, is a question.
Straight to API calls. Just do it by API call.
Oh, yeah. Try to finagle the filters so that you can find the CataSpend category via API. Yeah. Even I don't do that.
I got so used to using API calls because I got so frustrated.
I actually didn't include the dark mode story because I didn't add it. But you can now put the console into dark mode for those of you who like to live in bunkers for all your cloud computing needs. So that's a plus.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of dark mode.
I am as well, except for an email. It's my only place I don't like it because most spam comes with, assuming you have a white background. And so then I can't see the spam properly. So
is that a feature?
That's just my joke. But I some emails come in HTML formatted and they use black text. And then on a black background, you can't read it. So that's a bit of a challenging email. But it's an Outlook problem more than anything. It's not real, a real problem that anyone has. AWS is announcing Amazon Connect Cases. Cases is a feature of Amazon Connect that makes it easy for your contact center agent to create, collaborate on, and quickly resolve customer issues that require several customer conversations and follow-up tasks. And they can focus on solving the customer issue no matter how simple or how complex it is. Agents have relevant case details such as date and time opened, issue summary, or customer information in a single unified view with their call dashboard, and they can focus on solving the customer issue. The thing about this that I think is interesting more than anything is, Connect has been sort of this method for Amazon to monetize, the tooling that they use for basically their day-to-day business. But the interesting thing is this really attacks very aggressively Salesforce, Service Cloud, as well as ServiceNow, but it's kind of coming from the bottom up. It started at one of the lower levels of telephony, and it just keeps moving up and up the stack. And they have capabilities now to do, lookups through CRM systems from Salesforce directly. So it's interesting how Amazon's kind of attacking this area. And does Amazon release a CRM based on the CRM they use for the store? Could be interesting competitor to Salesforce long-term if they wanted to be that ambitious.
I wonder how many pure support case type SaaS customers are on AWS who are now competing with this service.
I mean, I imagine customers like Zendesk are probably now competing in a big way. So
maybe Zoho. Remember
Zoho? Oh yeah, Zoho. Lots of them.
Yeah. I mean, from a product perspective, it makes sense to follow the data, right? So for these support interactions, they're all going to come in through the Amazon Connect product. If you're a Connect customer, all those metrics about how long a case has been open and where it is, and the comments, and so it does sort of make sense to sort of capture it all on a service. But. Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. I was reading an article about Microsoft's strategy and how they, attacked Slack, and now they're coming out with two new products. They announced at Ignite. One is a Canva killer. Basically, does all the same things Canva does, and then there's one other one they created, which goes after Notion is the name of the document editing software. And it's both of those are very successful SaaS companies, startups that now Microsoft's going to just bundle into Office 365, and how the bundling is just killing these startups. And they were talking about Slack specifically, how their growth just basically hit a brick wall. Amazon can go into the bundling game too, and now bundle all your stuff into your cloud package. It's a good strategy. Microsoft proves it works.
And you really only have two vendors to deal with in the future. So, makes things easy.
But you go with Azure, you just have one vendor. So, you have that advantage too.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on to GCP. So before Google Next, they had a very quick announcement about Firestore being used to help you save money on your storage costs. So you now manage your storage costs automatically by automatically deleting expired data using the Firestore time to live tag. Firestore gets a TTL for Firestore Native and Firestore Data Store mode. This allows you to remove out-of-date data from the database and reduce your costs and simplify your use cases, which is great for garbage collection, security, and privacy and compliance use cases, which is nice in a Firestore, especially if it's on a mobile device. You want to clean that data up.
Yeah, I completely missed this announcement, so I'm glad you caught it and stuck it in here, because this is one of the features, you know, that really will, like, I use in DynamoDB all the time, right? This expiry. Mm-hmm. And it's just really nice for, you know, translation of data across, you know, separate functions or, you know, short-lived sort of operations. And so this is a great thing to have, because it can really simplify your sort of workflow if you can just have the things expire before the next run. So this is fantastic. I plan to try this out shortly.
It's something that's missing in a lot of database solutions that implement databases. People always forget that, well, in 5 years' time, it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you forget about going back and cleaning things up. So I'd like to see this everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be nice to see in more technologies.
So as long as they don't default the expiry to like 60 seconds. Where did my data go?
That's what Mongo is, so don't worry about it. If you want to lose your data, you just throw it in Mongo and it expires that quickly. So, all right, well, let's get on to Google Next. So I got back from my little trip, and I was excited to sit down and watch the keynotes, and I quickly fell asleep watching Thomas Kurian ramble on forever, and Sundar Pichai come on and ramble on forever. And so apparently, 123 things were announced, although they can't count because at least 20 of these items are things they already announced before Google Next, or were customers just saying they use Google Cloud, which is not an announcement Google. But overall, that was, interesting to see, but pretty dull. What did you guys think of the main keynotes and kind of the main show of Google Next?
There wasn't enough coffee on the entire planet to make me sit through that keynote. I got about 20 minutes in before I caught myself doing other things and then try to focus, like forcing my focus back until I remembered that there was like the highlight video that they cut down out of the keynotes. And I switched to that and I got bored watching that. And so like, I had a really hard time finding sessions and more specific, you know, security and network announcements and stuff that held my attention. And so I started actually shopping the catalog by time. So it's like, you know, oh, this video is only 2 minutes. Okay, I'll do that one.
I wonder, you know, like last year when we laughed at them for doing, you know, 18 months of Google Next, you know, at least the sessions that I attended, I found entertaining and the speakers were good. And this time around, it just felt like there was no energy in anything. Everyone was just sort of going through the motions of Google Next. The announcements, you know, why there's some cool stuff, and we'll get to all of that in a minute. We're sort of just, you know, evolutionary things, nothing revolutionary really, from my kind of initial take on it. And so, you know, thank goodness it wasn't in person, because I think a lot of people would have flown in for that and been sort of disappointed. But then I also wonder on the flip side, if people had been there reacting live to the announcements, and would that have brought more energy to the conversation? And, you know, even in the case of TK and these, you know, they did have small invited audiences that were in New York and in the different locations to, you know, listen to these things and to give some polite applause, but it just wasn't a big keynote. It wasn't a big thing. And it didn't feel that way. Like, it didn't feel like a Google Next or a reInvent or any of these other big conferences.
I think the keynote just wasn't for me. I'm not sure who the target audience was meant to be, but I don't feel like that type of keynote is something that, as a, you know, a more technical person, less than a business person, it just doesn't seem like it was addressed to me. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, the Werner keynotes that do technical deep dives on things. This was not a technical deep dive. It's just a sales, you know, hours long sales pitch.
Yeah, it definitely felt like it was targeted at an IT executive or a CEO or CFO who's like, why is this thing costing me so much money? And, you know, hearing Sundar talk about, you know, making more efficiencies and the cloud being an efficient way to do things, like, it's just... just not a lot of excitement to what they were talking about. And you're right. Maybe it's not the right, maybe the audience isn't supposed to be technical for this particular thing, but to me, is a big missed opportunity of Google Cloud Next.
Yeah, in a way, it's like we're already here watching the keynote because we're already bought in on the technology or your services. You don't need to sell it to us again. We're already, our butts are already in the seats. You know, we're already taking our time to look at this, at least make it valuable for people.
But even the more technical deep dives, like I went to a session about, you know, Google Cloud Armor, And it had this, it suffered from the same thing. It was, you know, the energy was very flat level from all the presenters. There was like unnecessary, like sort of format, like fanciness, like where they went to this, like almost like a newsroom type thing. And it just didn't land. And you know, like that coupled with the fact that none really the announcements across all of Google Next really blew my socks off. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, cool. But some, you know, it's all the same level that I would expect in a general sort of news week. So.
Yep. Well, let's talk about some of the announcements. I think that's a good segue. So I have a bunch of articles here. They did a good job summarizing kind of everything. There is one master 123 item list I mentioned, which isn't really 123 things, but you know, we'll let that go. they can't count. It's fine. So first up is secure security. And so they had five new security things to enhance what they call their invisible security guidelines. So first of all, Chronicle Security Operations, which allows you to detect, investigate, and respond to cyber threats with speed, scale, and intelligence of Google, brings the power of SIM, SOAR, and threat intelligence under a single display and allows for investigative pivots that enable analysts to switch between alerts and entities across Chronicle SIM. So yeah, it's bringing together SIM and SOAR and threat intelligence. Pretty obvious pivot there. Glad to see it done, but again, thanks. Next up was introducing confidential spaces to unlock the value of secure data collaboration. And so with confidential spaces, organizations can gain mutual value for aggregating and analyzing sensitive data such as personally identifiable information, protected health information, intellectual property, and cryptographic secrets while retaining full control over it. And again, this is sort of a weird one. I think it's like, oh, it's like a Google workspace that's secure that I can then share and do things with. And that's sort of what it's like. But then they get into like PHI and PII, and it's more of a DLP solution. So it's weirdly named. So that one's a little strange. Advancing digital sovereign on Europe's terms with new levels of controls and transparency and sovereignty. This is just really reiterating what we already talked about on the show, which is, you know, you can now do enabling of Google Cloud regions or projects based on Europe's needs, which is important if you're doing stuff in Europe. And then they get into some slightly more interesting things. The software delivery shield as a new way to improve software supply chain security, with supply chain attacks becoming a bigger and bigger issue for companies after the SolarWinds attack. Software Delivery Shield is a fully managed software supply chain security solution that offers a modular set of capabilities that equip developers, DevOps, and security teams with the tools they need to build secure cloud applications. Software Delivery Shield spans a family of Google Cloud services from developer tooling to runtimes like GKE, Cloud Code, Cloud Build, Cloud Deploy, Artifact Registry, Binary Authorization, and more. And you can now develop securely with the new Cloud Workstations, a fully managed dev environment on Google Cloud. Cloud Code now includes Source Protect, and assured open source software is now in preview. Cloud Build now officially supports SLSA level 3 builds by default, and new built-in security posture management capabilities for GKE, all tied into that Software Delivery Shield offering there. Anything you guys want to add about that before I move on to the other security things?
I just wonder how many startups got funded off of SolarWinds and now just realize they're not going to be first to market with their product.
I mean, these are pretty good. They're definitely needed. And I did learn all about the Salsa, what do you call that? You know, the level of certification, which, you know, I'll give the conference credit for that. I didn't know what that was before attending these sessions. This is compliance.
What is it?
Yep. It's fancy.
Fancy compliance. Okay.
It's a, you know, like, you know, FIPS Liber 3. This is Salsa, you know, it's a completely different rule set, but just another compliance standard.
Interesting. And then they also mentioned a bunch of other security things that are also done. Assured open source now available in preview. I just mentioned that previously. Integrating ForeCD, which was an acquisition they did, into Security Command Center. The startup was focused on attack simulation and risk quantifications. ReCAPTCHA Enterprise and Signified are partnering to bring new anti-fraud and abuse solutions to your website. Prisma Access from Palo Alto now can now be paired with BeyondCorp Enterprise Essentials. The Cybersecurity Action Team now packages best practices and implementations for Zero Trust Advisory Solutions. Google Cloud Armor was named a strong performer in Forrester WAF Wave. That was also an announcement in the count for 123. The fact that you're in the Wave is not an announcement of a new feature. And apparently Google DLP is now coming to Google Chat with new trust rules for Google Drive for granular control. And they're now going to be enabling client-side encryption in both Gmail and Google Calendar, which if that's been something you've wanted for a long time, it's finally coming to Gmail. I think it's only been asked for since Gmail got announced for business. So glad to finally see that one come to the market finally. Also, most of what I just mentioned to you is in preview or not yet announced or not yet available. So again, you know, it's all vaporware until it gets, you know, officially released, but stuff in preview we at least go play with.
Well, it's cloud next and not cloud now.
That's right. That was a show title. All right. Lots of security. Lots of good stuff there. Great to see the security stuff. They also announced a bunch of new partnerships too. I didn't mention that, but you know, embracing those partners who can help you with your security needs. Let's move on to your developers. Building, learning, and growing your developer career faster with Google Cloud. Of course, so I think this is a pretty huge program announcement for learning Google Cloud. You can now get an annual subscription to help you learn and grow your career with Google Cloud. These initiatives are being released, including the Google Cloud Skills Boost annual subscription, the Google Clout Challenge, and the Google Cloud Fly Cup Challenge we talked about previously. But the real thing here is the Google Cloud Skills Boost is available to you for $299 a year. It's built for developers who are looking to accelerate their professional skills and business growth. And this package provides extensive training and certifications benefits, including live learning events, Google Cloud credits, and certification exam vouchers. So you get access to 700 plus lab skills badges and courses. You get $500 in Google Cloud credits. You get that Google Cloud cert exam voucher. You get an additional $500 in Google Cloud credits after the first cert each year you earn. So if you earn a certificate every year, they'll give you an additional $500 in credits. Live learning events led by Google Cloud experts, which I'm sort of intrigued by. And then quarterly technical briefings hosted by Google Cloud execs, which if they're as riveting as the rest of Google Cloud Next, I would definitely be skipping. But it's nice effort regardless.
Yeah, I mean, this is usually, you know, an education program that you usually can only get through like negotiating from your employer. So the fact that they're directly selling this to consumers, to developers is huge. And I think it's pretty neat.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of people who are looking for work or want to get out of their current jobs because of either go back to office rules or something else. So this is a great kind of carrot to dangle in front of people for, you know, get some new skills, get a new job.
And if you're actually going to use the Google credits, the price is actually -$200.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, wow.
Actually, a -$700 if you get the additional $500 after you get your free cert. So,
yeah.
There
you go. Yeah, and the good thing is all those labs, those don't cost you anything, even though you're doing work in cloud projects.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely a great option for a student who wants to learn Google Cloud or just someone who wants to retrain in their career on Google Cloud or if someone is doing Azure and they keep hearing us talk about how amazing Google Cloud is in comparison to Azure, you know, they can now spend, you know, a few $100 and start learning about amazing Google Cloud capabilities they could take advantage of at their next job in the future. All right. Well, the next evolution of Looker, your unified business intelligence platform, is coming. They've rebranded Data Studio to Looker Studio. And it allows Google to unify their BI product family under the Looker umbrella, which thank goodness, because it was getting confusing. You can now access Looker data models from Looker Studio. And they're also aware that customers require enterprise features. And Looker Studio Pro is now generally available with all those enterprise widgets you need. Looker Studio Pro widgets will include new enterprise management features, team collaboration capabilities, and an SLA. Looker is now available in Google Cloud Console natively and deeply integrated into cloud infrastructure core services such as key security and management services. And Looker is also getting integrated into Google Workspaces. So insights are available in familiar productivity tools users use every day, like Google Sheets, available to plug that stuff right into there, which it can be pretty powerful for our show notes, which we put in Google Docs. I can now do magic Looker views for you guys.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I've been playing around with the Looker Studio. And so I'm pretty good, actually. Like it's far more intuitive than, you know, the some of the things that you can do with like QuickSight on Amazon or some of the other BI tools that I'm familiar with. And, you know, that and the fact that you can, you know, configure all of that to Google Sheets or BigQuery, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Very flexible.
I was actually working on an effort the other day, and I had a spreadsheet that was, you know, thousands and thousands of rows, and Excel was just bogging down on my laptop because it's Excel. And I was having trouble with pivot tables, of course, because everyone has trouble with pivot tables. And it wasn't sequencing dates in the way I wanted to, because I wanted to segment basically by quarter, and it wasn't working. And I couldn't figure it out. And Google, of course, all the Excel documentation you ever Google for is either not the version of Mac Excel that I have, or for the Windows. So it doesn't help you in any way. And I just gave up. And I was like, I was putting in Google. And I put in Google Sheets and I was able to do way more in like half the time because of all the BI stuff they added into the thing. And I got my job done so much faster, which was really great.
Nice.
Well, don't let anyone tell you that there isn't innovation hemming in networking for the cloud. Because Google is apparently announcing 20 plus new cloud networking innovations. And they start out with their Private Service Connect offering, which has received several enhancements in preview, of course. L7 PSC, or Private Service Connect, provides consumer controller security, routing, and telemetry to help enable more flexible and consistent policy for all your services. The Private Service Connect over Interconnect now provides support for on-prem traffic through cloud interconnects to PSC endpoints. And the Private Service Connect for Hybrid also enables producers and consumers to securely connect and access managed services from cloud or on-prem, which I guess is nice. They are now also giving you native VPC integrations for several partners, including Confluent, Databricks, DataStack, Grafana, and Neo4j. The Media CDN capability now supports live stream API to ingest and package source content into HTTP live streaming and dash formats for optimized live streaming. And they are also announcing a preview of dynamic ad insertion into Google Ad Manager, which provides video ad placements and third-party ad insertion using their Video Stitcher API for personalized ad placement. Which, how is that a network placement?
That's going to be my question.
Network Actions is a new fully managed serverless solution based on open source WebAssembly that enables programmability for customers to deploy their own code directly in the request response path at the edge. Using Network Actions, you can unlock a wide variety of network use cases such as security controls, cache offload, custom logs, and more. And now for your containerized workloads, they're giving you Network Function Optimizer. This capability delivers that allows customers to connect multiple container network functions, apply labels for selection, and steer the traffic for them using the labels. And the Google Cloud Firewall is now being expanded to Cloud Firewall Essentials and Standard to make your firewall days more complicated. And the standard provides you an expanded policy object for firewall rules that can simplify the configuration and micro-segmentation to help protect your cloud infrastructure workloads, as well as leverage Google Cloud Threat Intelligence with 5 curated lists of known malicious IPs, fully qualified domain names, and geolocation-based web objects. And the existing cloud firewall capabilities are now wrapped into the Cloud Firewall Essentials. So if you had firewall before, you now have Cloud Firewall Essentials, which means that eventually standard will get new things that you'll want and pay more money for. Well done.
It's interesting that they lump all the content CDN type stuff in with networking. Amazon do the same thing. All their programs are also networking and content delivery. It's like it's their core business or something.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a little weird to me too that they, you know, that both of them do that. Because again, I guess it's networking from an edge perspective, but from an application delivery, you don't really think about it as part of the network. You think about it as part of your app.
Yeah, but it's so boring. It seems like network.
Fair.
It working? Then it must be the network.
The Network Actions is nice too. It's kind of like serverless at the edge. But you know, again, like these, like some of the things they talked about in this network section are actually really cool capabilities, but you know, didn't make it to main stage, didn't make it to the afternoon sessions. Again, these are like things that I, you know, at a Google or sorry, reInvent, these would be main stage topics and people would be applauding these innovations that help them do things. And, you know, Private Service Connect is actually really interesting when you figure out what it means, which is more complicated than I have time to explain to you all. But, you know, it's pretty nice to be able to have different options for connectivity to Google Cloud that don't require you to use Equinix, for example, in a big way. All right, then if you are using Google Workspaces, which again, for those who don't remember, Google Workspace is Google Apps. These will help your organization thrive in their hybrid work environment. There are several new features for Google Meets coming, including Speaker Spotlight and Slides, which is like this really creepy thing where your video gets implanted into the slide. Kind of creepy.
What?
Yeah. There's new adaptive framing with AI-powered camera for Huddly and Logitech devices. There's now a meeting room check, which will tell you who's actually in the room of a meeting, which is kind of nice because I always have that problem when I'm in a meeting. There's a meeting room and you're like, who's that little person over on the right-hand side of the meeting? I can't tell. There's a new companion mode mobile, a second screen for Google Meets. You can assign conference rooms for breakout rooms and meets. There's new automatic video framing, automatic meeting transcriptions, and you can now control slides directly in Meets. All great enhancements to the Meets product, which was desperately needed.
So you guys are making fun of the speaker spotlight, but Teams recently put that feature in there, and I do a lot of screen share where I just try to explain some of the craziness that I'm doing, and it's a really amazing feature when you're doing that. Like, see right here, and you point on your screen to whatever stupid hack you put in place.
Are you like a newscaster? Are you like a weatherman?
Weather forecaster.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I've yet to be in a meeting with you where you've done that, which I would, mostly because, you know, I would mock you.
Yes. Just publicly and mercilessly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll happen. Just wait. Yeah.
Well, Google Chat, which is Google's pathetic version of Slack, is getting some updates too, including custom emojis. Thank goodness. Broadcast only spaces in Google Chat, so you can just announce things into a room and have no one respond to your bad messages. And then the most dreaded feature of all, inline threaded conversations.
No!
The worst.
So broadcast only spaces, it's just like Microsoft Teams then.
Yeah, like Microsoft Teams. There's new smart canvas technology coming to all your Google apps, which allows you to merge more types of data into your various documents like Looker. Custom building blocks for Google Cloud, think snippet templates for things like to-do lists or meeting notes will all be coming into your workspaces as well, so you have pre-packaged templating. Variables in Google Docs to allow you to define command data elements in a doc or contract and update it across documents by updating the variables. Hey, they got macros. That's nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. Smart chips and new timeline views in Google Sheets extend the power of the smart canvas, making it easier to pull in people, files, and calendar details. As well as smart chips get data extract integrations into third-party apps like Asana, Atlassian, and more. We mentioned earlier DLP is coming to chat. Apparently, it was already in Gmail, Drive, Docs, Sheets, and Slides. So now in your chat room, if you're giving away proprietary data through DLP violations, your security team will now be reaching out to you about that. New trust rules in Google Drive for more granular control of internal and external data, providing admins more flexibility in establishing collaboration boundaries. Client-side encryption we talked about earlier. New ways to extend the power of your workspace with APIs for Meet and Chat and Meet add-on SDK to extend Meets in any way you want to do that. As well as AppSheet and Google Chat integrate for all your low-code, no-code needs. So now you can bring low-code to Google Chat.
What?
Yeah. So
I can finally say that I've been Sherlocked by Google, because the variables in Google Docs is exactly the code and function I wrote for the show notes generator, where I would insert the
You never finished that, so
I didn't finish it.
You didn't technically get you didn't technically get Sherlocked. You just
that was the only part I finished, though. That was like the one thing I did.
Nice. Well, you can check out that new feature and let us know how it works.
I will. Yeah.
The APIs are good. Well, I'm sure Google can only hope they get to build the same ecosystem that Slack has.
I mean, they would have to go a long way to compete with Slack or Teams, in my opinion, from where Google Meets is right now.
Like, it changed their mind. Like, there's a new chat thing killed and born every couple of years. So
every 6 months,
even within Google.
Exactly, only within Google. So maybe they've settled down now. You know, they killed Duo. Now it's something else. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, do you think they've gotten enough flack now for killing chat services that they're like, okay, this one has to be the one for real?
Just don't, even if you're going to start a new one, just give it the same name.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone know.
And have a migration path between these things. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm not going to let up making fun of them because it's just too much fun.
Yeah.
We use Google Chat for one thing. It's our DR solution when Slack is down.
Yeah.
my DR has always been go to WhatsApp. So that's where I go.
Have you been waiting months and months to hire your new AWS GCP or Azure architect, only to have them be poached at the 11th hour by a startup with a juice bar? Initiative stalled because you're having trouble hiring? Well, I have a simple solution, Foghorn Consulting. Foghorn Consulting provides top-notch cloud engineers to the world's most innovative companies and can be burning down your DevOps and cloud backlogs as soon as next week. Foghorn certified AWS, GCP, and Azure professionals are armed with infrastructure as code, and from day one will be designing performant, optimized cloud native or hybrid environments that deliver on the promise of cloud. Their FogOps solution even provides on-demand cloud engineering to augment your existing teams. Visit www.foghornconsulting.com or send an email to cloudtalentnow@foghornconsulting.com and tell them the CloudPod sent you. Your dedicated FogOps team is with you for the long haul, and they bring their own juice.
Well, of course, it can't be a cloud conference without a lot of big data talk and data lakes, of course. And so they do have several things coming to the big data and data lake space, including new capabilities to analyze unstructured and streaming data directly in BigQuery. They're adding support for new data formats popular in the industry, including Apache Iceberg, and support for the Linux Foundation Delta Lake and Apache Hudi specs. New integration experience for Apache Spark. They're expanding the capabilities of Dataplex for automated data quality and data lineage to help ensure customers have greater confidence in their data. The Looker rebranding we talked about already. The Vertex AI Vision is a new service that can make powerful computer vision and image recognition AI more accessible to data practitioners. And they're expanding their integrations with many of the most popular enterprise data platforms, including Elastic, Mongo, and Palantir. And I was excited you guys with big data stuff. It's always the best.
Well, I got stuck on, like, I'm going to build a data lake in Elastic or Mongo. Like, whoa.
Yeah, your brain short-circuited on that, I know. Well, the other one they had in here was ServiceNow, and I was like, ServiceNow is not a data platform.
Huh. I love that.
And then there's the evil Palantir.
Yes, the evil Palantir.
Love how they build the big open collaboration, easy to use data platform, and then all the tools to close it down again. Like, we give it and we take it away.
Indeed. Well, the next wave of Google Cloud infrastructure innovation is here with the new C3 VM and Hyperdisks. The new C3 machine series powered by the 4th-gen Intel Xeon Scalable Processor and Google's custom Intel Infrastructure Processing Unit, or the IPU, combined together to give you the 80% higher IOPS for vCPU and DNBS workloads when compared with the Hyperdisk. There's a quote here from Nick McCown, Intel Fellow and General Manager at Network and Edge Group, a Senior Vice President. We are pleased to have co-designed the first ASIC infrastructure processing unit with Google Cloud, which has now launched in the new C3 machine series. A first of its kind in any public cloud, C3 VMs will run workloads on 4th-gen Intel Xeon scalable processors while they free up programmable packet processing to the IPU securely at line rates of 200 gigabits per second. This Intel and Google collaboration enables customers through infrastructure that is more secure, flexible, and performant. So basically, what I'm hearing here is Intel paid Google a lot of money to make them give a competitor to all of the Nitro stuff that Amazon is doing that they can now publicly talk about. So, well done.
Yeah, to say it's the first in public clouds kind of does sound very much like what Nitro does.
It's the first Intel-driven one. I think that's the key word here. If it was ARM-based, then you're right. It would not be the first, but it's the first Intel one. It's new on some words.
I can't get around the fact that C3s were the name of the 2013 compute instance at Amazon.
And they just copied it without even thinking that through, right? Yeah, it's sort of weird. Yeah.
I've got all these lightning round jokes coming up now. It's really sucks. This should have been a lightning round joke. You know, if you order one of those C3 instances, it's a C3PO.
Nice. Yeah.
Boo, nice. Boo.
Winner! Get on the point.
All right, let's move on to something else then. Google is announcing up to an 11% additional discount on spot instances. Spot instances remove the 24-hour limit of ephemeral instances are a competitive option for running your non-critical workloads. While the savings are pretty healthy on the N1 and N2 at 4%, the real savings are in the T2D and in US West Central and East region, which gives you the full 11% additional discount. Now, you know, the way you solve this problem is you create a spot marketplace, and then the prices just fluctuate versus, you know, this abomination, which is sort of like spot, but not really. But that's why they can now announce spot price reductions, because no one wants the T2D instances, and so we'll just give you a better discount to hopefully entice you to use them. Well done.
I mean, I hear you, but I also, like, after dealing with the complexity of dealing with a spot market, like, it is really kind of refreshing to not do that.
It is refreshing not to, but, I just sort of laugh because it's like, well, this is why there's a market on AWS is for the exact reason, because when you have no demand, then you want to lower the price so more people want it.
And, yeah.
Yeah. It's all about prioritizing, you know, how much density of compute am I actually executing with all that power I'm consuming? Versus trying to give you a more predictable price. Cloud monitoring now supports PromQL. Throughout the cloud monitoring user interface, including Metrics Explorer and the Dashboards Builder, you can now just learn Prometheus query language, and now you can use everything in Google Cloud. So there you go. Now you can trade your skills from Prometheus all the way to Google Cloud monitoring. Google Cloud is inking a agreement with Coinbase for both cloud and payments. This includes multiple components, but Coinbase will move several of its apps to Google Cloud, and Google Cloud will in turn use Coinbase technology to allow a subset of its customers to pay for cloud services leveraging cryptocurrencies. There's a quote here from Thomas Kurian himself. "We want to make building in Web3 faster and easier, and this partnership with Coinbase helps developers get one step closer to that goal. Our focus is making it frictionless for all customers and to take advantage of our scalability, reliability, security, and data services so they can focus on innovations in the Web3 space." And all I can think is this is a really good way for Google to lose a lot of money for customers buying socks with crypto coins.
Wait, I'm confused. So if someone gets into my GCP environment, the first thing they're going to do naturally is spin up a whole bunch of instances to mine cryptocurrency, and then they're going to pay for it using cryptocurrency?
Well, I mean, they're not going to pay for your services
with cryptocurrency. No, I guess I'm going to pay for it in cryptocurrency.
You're going to pay it with real money, and they're going to take the crypto and run for the bank. So.
Could we pay with Doji?
They didn't say specifically which cryptos they would support for payments, but all I can think is that's a very volatile market and a good way for Google to lose money. I'm like, well, we paid our bill today, and sorry, the crypto crashed the next day.
Yeah,
Google will be fine. We got plenty of money.
Yeah.
New money.
Something tells me they've worked that out too, where it's like, yeah, at close, it'll
instantly liquidate. They just
instant liquidate. Yeah. That's how like people, someone's like, I bought a car with crypto. And like, no, you gave crypto to a company that converted it to cash and gave the cash to the dealership because no one's actually taking your crypto.
Right.
And then apparently that was Google Next, guys. But just like 3 days after Google Next, they announced that the Israel region is now open, which, you know, sort of say, why didn't that make your list of 123 announcements? You could have had 124.
That's the problem. There are too many announcements to make.
It's a really big time difference to Israel. That's my only guess.
Sure. Well, if you are in Israel as part of the Startup Nation, as Google called Israel, they are having a party on November 9th to celebrate their new region somewhere in Israel. So if you're interested in that, check out the blog article. But yeah, that's it for Google. So Google Cloud Next. I think we said it very well in our show title, Google Cloud Past, because these are things that all the other cloud providers already had in many ways. Not a lot of amazing innovation from the Google teams, but some nice enhancements. I'd say, again, I think a lot of evolutionary things, not a lot of revolutionary things in what I saw in Google Next. And so custom emojis, that's always a win.
All right, so you're going to do the good announcements now.
No, that was unfortunately it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's just a necessary move. They want to make GCP profitable. They have to go after, you know, segments of the market that are going to need more mature features that have been around. So we're, it is going to be sort of me too announcements probably for a while as they build that up.
Mature features.
I mean, they don't bug me. I want all of the me toos. So then people get to pick what cloud platform they go to, and commoditization can be accelerated.
Yeah, maturity is an important thing. I'm constantly blown away by browsing through Google services and I'm looking at things, and so many things are not GA.
Mm-hmm. A lot of preview stuff. And they don't really have a good timeline on how long stuff stays in preview. I actually didn't mention it, but they announced flexible commit use discounts, or flex CUDs, which replaces the CUDs. Just like you had reserve instances on Amazon, now you have savings plans. It's basically their answer to savings plan. And, I can say we've been trying with this at work on a preview. And so then, they announced it at Google Next and we needed to do another procurement operation. And I'm like, well, but and my guy didn't have access to the thing. He couldn't find it because he wasn't in some secret preview group. And I was like, well, why wouldn't it be available now? You GA'd it last week. They're like, oh, no, it won't be actually live for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So
somewhat generally available.
It's going to be general available imminently any day now. Just wait a couple more minutes. So that's a little bit annoying. So I'm used to the AWS world of, and this is available today to go use, and I can go click into the console right that minute, 10 minutes later, walking out of the conference, and oh, there it is, and I can go play with it. So that's what I'm used to and accustomed to. That's not apparently the way Google sees things quite yet. All right, well, Azure had their Ignite conference. And so we're going to go to the same similar kind of thing here. We're going to walk through a bunch of different announcements broken up into different segments. So bear with us. So developers are first in the Ignite conference. And I do think there were some neat developer productivity things here. So let's see what you guys think. First of all, they wanted to increase developer productivity as you can do more with less, because, of course, that worked so well in 2001 and 2002 when Microsoft first invented it with Windows 2000. They are rolling that back out for the recession. So, you know, I appreciate us going retro there, Microsoft, on going back to do more with less. Always a great start. But first up is Azure Deployment Environments is available to you in preview. This includes the Microsoft DevBox and the Azure Deployment Environments, which pair together to give you a developer complete cloud-powered workflow for any project that can be fully managed by IT admins. DevBoxes offers developers high-performance cloud-based workstations that help you get coding quickly, and the Azure Deployment Environments enable teams to spin up the infrastructure needed to run their projects in the cloud quickly and on demand, including Azure Load Testing, which helps teams test and meet scalar performance goals with confidence all from inside of the Azure Deployment Environment and leveraging the Microsoft DevBox. So, if you're trying to go to thin clients for your devs, or you're trying to use iPads, this is the DevBox, something you connect to and get your full IDE environment, leveraging VS Code and all the magic of Azure.
I like it because typically, you know, well, lots of historical Windows applications have been really clunky to deploy and really hard to deploy in new environments, and it's never been tied together nicely. So something like this to spin up and down environments, especially load testing as well, which is always very expensive because of the scale of things. They get left turned on. They cost a fortune. So it's a neat tool.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I hope this automatically turns everything off.
Say that specifically.
That's the one feature I'd want.
Yeah. Didn't see those words, but yeah, hopefully.
You have to call a 1-800 number and ask, and then first they'll give you a 50% discount for 3 months, and then you got to call back again.
Yeah. Well, also for developers, they're bringing the GitHub advanced security capabilities to Azure DevOps. This brings GitHub's industry-leading developer-focused security tooling directly to Azure DevOps. GitHub streamlines workflows and processes through better collaboration and automation. And the GitHub Advanced Security provides a native application security solution within our development workflow, enabling the management of open-source dependencies, custom code, and secrets across the software lifecycle, which is great. And then there's new Power Pages generally available, which is an enterprise-grade connectivity platform for organizations to build and launch external self-service websites. The Power Pages platform allows you to connect with customers, partners, and communities to share business data, collaborate with, and automate business processes with scale and security. And I'd like to remind you all that Power is our low-code solution. So this is a killer of several SaaS companies that make business websites easily with a GUI, all powered by Power Pages now.
I don't think it's better than SharePoint.
Yeah. I mean, you hope this isn't SharePoint like.
Yep. You hope. Low code SharePoint.
That's, I mean, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, SharePoint's very low code.
Yeah, that's right.
It's low functionality as well, but you know.
This definitely targets Wix and some of the other companies that specialize in simple things like this. I'm trying to remember, there's one that sponsors a lot of podcasts, not ours, which is why I don't know their name. But that is also very popular. But we'll see how these products work out in the future. All right, moving on to Azure. Several new Azure capabilities at Ignite, including new Nutanix cloud customers can now run Nutanix natively on Azure. So you can, if you have Nutanix on-prem, you can now ship your data to Azure more easily, leverage that for migrations or for running your workloads between both facilities using the same storage backend. They've updated Azure VMware solutions to include stretch clusters, which provide 99.99% uptime for mission-critical apps, requiring the highest availability and customer-managed keys for encryption. A lot of these are called stretch clusters, by the way, because that SLA is a stretch at best. new collaborative SAP ERP in preview, allowing you to integrate workflows across SAP S/4HANA, Microsoft Teams, and Microsoft Cloud for close collaboration without application or context switching. Updates to Azure Center for SAP, which is their end-to-end deployment and management experience running SAP on Azure. Now preview support for registering Windows-based systems and installing SAP S/4HANA 2020 and 2021 while providing cost transparency through integration with cost analysis features and even more quality checks. The Azure Disk Storage Portfolio is now GAing the Premium SSD V2. I'll be waiting for the Premium Ultra SSD V2s. Azure VM and Azure Kubernetes now support Ampere Ultra ARM-based processors. The Azure Elastic SAN, which is a new cloud-native, fully managed and massively scalable storage area network service only available on Azure, because it's named Azure Elastic SAN, I would assume that. expansion of confidential computing to now support Azure Virtual Desktop and SQL Server on Azure VM. Azure Cosmos DB is expanding beyond its NoSQL roots of losing all your data to support distributed PostgreSQL, which you also don't want to have lose your data. SAP Change Capture Data Connect in Data Factor is generally available. Purview, which provides data governance and with risk and compliance, now gets business workflows and business meta models. And Azure Arc gets some love with some expansion of hybrid benefits to include Kubernetes and Azure Auto Manage in general availability for all your Azure Arc on-premise Azure clouds. There you go.
What's the use case for a SAN or an Elastic SAN in somebody else's cloud? Isn't that the service that they run to provide you volumes and block services and everything else? I don't understand why you'd provision a SAN in the cloud just to break it up into.
I think that might be an anachronism of Azure. I think you actually do have to do more management of that layer than you do in the other clouds. I have the least experience in Azure, but I remember there being something along those lines where you have to sort of build your virtual SAN for that block storage.
That's crazy.
Yes, nonsense.
The cloud now sells service. I'm like,
Well, I mean, Oracle did it with VMware. That's one of their things. Like, we won't tell you how to manage VMware. You can just run it on our systems and take care of all the none of the advantages of managed services. So I go to the Azure SAN website because I was curious. It says Azure Elastic SAN is a cloud native storage area network service built on Azure. Gain access to an end to end experience like your on premise SAN. Azure Elastic SAN gets the same simplified management experience in the cloud as with your on-premise storage area network. Gain higher resiliency and minimize downtime with rapid provisioning of your SAN.
But I'm moving from my on-premise SAN because of the constraints it has.
But I mean, I want some constraints, but not the other constraints.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so confusing. I feel like it's to bring compatibility to some software product that for some reason can't use other storage.
It's 100 terabit SAN, which gives you up to 2 million IOPS maximum and 32,000 max megabits per second. You can share this across 100 1 terabyte volumes where each volume can hit a max of 64,000 IOPS per second. The larger SAN pool you have, the more efficient you can work by sharing the larger provision performance pool. So this is basically for people who can't optimize off a SQL server and need a really fast SAN or SAP HANA use case.
What if they made a really big SAN that everybody shared?
Right.
Oh, wait.
Actually,
segmentation, Peter. I don't want to use that SAN. I want my own. But I had to manage and care and feed.
To be fair, I wished AWS had iSCSI support or some way of mounting EBS volumes other than directly attaching to a machine, like a network attached EBS. And this does support iSCSI. And so
that's what I'm thinking. It's backward compatibility.
So while you wanted that feature, you didn't want it for anything good.
Actually, I wanted it to build a basically building a NAS device in the cloud across AZs, because then you could mount volumes. You run a machine in one AZ, but you could mount a volume that's actually in a different AZ across the network.
Like I said, nothing good.
Nothing good.
What could go wrong? You're managing it yourself.
Could possibly go wrong.
Well, AI, of course, is a big part of the Microsoft portfolio. And so they're bringing you more AI with Microsoft Syntex, which is content AI integrated with the flow of work in Microsoft Cloud. And you'll find it sneaking into Microsoft Office 365, Azure, Power Platform, and Purview, which I guess is Clippy for all those tools. Yay. Syntex automatically reads, tags, and indexes high volumes of content and connects it to where it's needed in context. And then building on top of the GitHub Copilot, they're bringing natural language capabilities to Power Automate with descriptions to Cloud Flows as well in the AI side. So AI tooling is taking over the world.
I can't wait till AI can do my job. It's going to be great.
Except for you won't get paid if it does your job. So
that's fine.
Minor details, right? Well, Azure is giving you the new Firewall Basic now in preview. This is a new SKU for Azure Firewall because Jonathan loves SKUs, designed to meet the needs of SMBs by providing enterprise-grade protection of their cloud environment at an affordable price point. It is cloud-native, highly available, stateful firewalls, a service offering that enables customers to centrally govern and log all of their traffic flows with essential capabilities at scale. Azure Firewall Basic includes Layer 3 and Layer 7 filtering and alerting on malicious traffic, built-in threat intelligence. So this means you have three firewall SKUs to choose from. Firewall Premium, Firewall Standard, and Firewall Basic. And the big differentiator between basic and standard is that the basic only supports 250 megabits per second, which is a pretty big limitation unless you have a very small workload.
Yeah, just imagine that's how you piss off the security team is you're like, oh, we selected basic.
I think it's, well, it's the other way around, right? It's, otherwise you wouldn't select anything at all. And so this is how security teams are like, just choose something.
So anything.
Yeah. Anything is better than nothing, but. You know, it's nice to get you enterprise level features, I guess, but your workload's got to be pretty small for only 250 megabits per second. And then, of course, it's a fun outage when your firewall is the reason why you had an outage because you maxed out the 250 megabits per second because you didn't capacity plan your firewall properly in the cloud. Yeah, going backwards, guys, going backwards.
Hey, you asked me to save money, saving money.
Yep. Well, of course, everyone's all the rave of anomaly detection with AI ops. And so Microsoft has to get into the game now with AI Dice. AI Dice is their new entry into AI ops. They're leveraging AI to help you with your ops with new AI ops tool, a novel anomaly detection algorithm jointly developed by Microsoft Research and Azure. That's the same company that identifies anomalies in large scale, multidimensional time series data.
That would have made a great show title. The cloud pod rolls the AI dice.
Well, if a very retired guy with Ignite, we're not done yet. We have more Ignite to go.
Oh my goodness.
So in their main article about Ignite, they talked about Microsoft Places, which is a new workplace app that optimizes the use of physical space, which is tied to the insights of the 80% of employees going to the office to see each other.
Say what?
Apparently the only reason why 80% of people go into the office is to see their peers. And apparently this helps you maximize your space. So I assume Microsoft Places is basically their answer to Envoy. Basically kill Envoy someday. But you know, they wrap it in all these words like, oh, people like to go see people in the office. But you know, I don't know. That's.
I was thinking of it as literally like a floor plan. Like I'm gonna, if I arrange the desks here where everyone's on like the sweatshop row seating, I can get this many people, or you know, that kind of thing. Your Envoy is probably a better comparison.
Well, maybe you can do some cool things. You know, if it looks at people's calendars and which people meet most often, and put them closer together in the office, so there's less walking around time and stuff like that. Or maybe you can say, I don't want to sit next to that guy. And have it seat you at the other end of the room.
Yeah, the blog post that they made for Microsoft Places, the tagline is "Turn your spaces into places."
Oh God!
Oof!
Not saying I can do any better, but
yeah. So basically says coordinate where work happens to handles hybrid scheduling and intelligent booking. It handles wayfinding and hot desk booking, Microsoft Teams room booking, and helps with serendipitous meetups, which apparently allows colleagues to easily create impromptu meetups and share with others in the office. It gives you space insights and space optimization to reduce your costs, and all embedded into Microsoft Graph, partnering with all of their partners. So yeah, this is an Envoy killer, basically. If they're going to throw into 365, then everyone's going to replace Envoy with this. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Envoy doesn't do half of those things, and you know, that's pretty impressive if there's a tool that's like, oh, yeah, you only need 30% of your office space based on people actually logging in.
Actually going into the office, yeah. They're giving you a new feature in Microsoft Teams, Intelligent Recap, which is like having a virtual assistant at every meeting. It will use AI to assign tasks from the meeting, automatically generates chapters from the meeting, and shares personalized insights from the recording, enabling users to discover information that matters most to them. This, unfortunately, though, will be part of a premium Teams add-on purchased separately, which is sort of a bummer because I was like, this is kind of cool. I kind of like the idea of this because I'm curious what action items it would give me in every meeting.
Oh,
but unfortunately,
I'm totally afraid of this feature.
Yeah.
The personalized insights would just be me swearing
every
meeting.
The next would be HR notifier from Microsoft Teams. Yeah. The next one is Microsoft Edge Workspaces, which is a shared set of browser tabs in Microsoft Edge where groups can view the same websites and latest working files in one place. The example they use is that imagine a new team member being brought onto an existing project. Instead of overwhelming them with links and files via email, the team can share one link to their Microsoft Edge Workspace, which has all the relevant files and links open as browser tabs, because browser tabs are definitely not over-simulating compared to email.
Isn't that just a list of bookmarks?
Did they talk to anyone before developing this feature? This is why?
You know, they
called a wiki.
they throw spaghetti at the wall and then they hope stuff works, you know, and this one might not work. I don't know. You'll see.
It had to be inspired by one of those someone was looking over the shoulder of a really, really productive employee. And it's one of those people who just happens to have they never close a tab, right? It's like 4,000 tabs.
Yeah, but I don't want to share that experience with my coworkers.
No,
that's like a virus.
That's not why they're productive. They're productive because they work hard.
If some usability analyst was like watching this user and was like, "Oh, they have so many tabs. They just jump between them." And that's how they're.
That must be it.
Oh, that's terrible.
I guarantee you that second user with those 4,000 tabs is not going to be very productive.
Nope.
It's not even like a real-time collaboration thing, is it? I thought maybe you could have a tab open and somebody else could have a tab open and you could both see stuff at the same time. It's not even that. It's literally just a list of tabs.
No, the tabs are the update. As you update the tabs, the updates are everybody else. So or as you're updating the thing, the documents and the tabs, they get updated too. So it is live collaboration in those tabs, but assuming those tabs are being changed often.
It's not like I'm typing something into a page that's open and someone else can see what I'm typing.
I think they can, but I'd have to test this and I'm not testing this.
It is pretty cool that we ridicule things without even trying them. I wonder how many people are listening to this being like, these guys are ridiculous. They haven't even tried it and they're ridiculing it.
It's the Azure section. Nobody's listening by now anyway.
We already talked about Google. They're gone. They're long gone. Yeah, it's fine. Defender for DevOps tackles a big problem faced by the tech industry. New and legacy code not written with security in mind. Which can be rapidly exploited by attackers. Organizations can secure applications as they are being built, giving developers assurance that when the code from external sources or are working with large application teams, they know they can get ahead of security vulnerabilities and deliver a more secure solution.
I know the show gets too long because we all get punchy and what is it? What's it do? Just turn it off. It should just turn it off.
Yeah. Well, the Power Platform, again, the no code, low code solution, enables orgs to introduce low-code broadly to spur innovation with the knowledge that IT admins maintain governance and security capabilities over your low-code implementation, allowing teams to create at scale without security concern.
Even want to know what that looks like. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. And then the last one, which I sort of raised my eyebrows and is going to have a future Justin Does a Thing article about, Microsoft Entra. Is a new identity and access management solution designed to securely work across multiple cloud platforms. Microsoft Entra Identity Governance helps orgs ensure the right people have the right access to the right resources at the right time. With Entra Identity Governance, workload identities control and secure identities for digital workloads such as apps and services and controls user access to cloud resources, while certificate-based auth enables customers to adopt easily deployable phishing-resistant authentication. And Microsoft Entra does is Halloween time, so I'm thinking Microsoft Entrails every time I see it, but I think it's supposed to be short for entrance. But Entra. Yeah, so this is an IAM aggregator across multiple clouds. I'm sort of intrigued by that concept of that. I don't know if that came out of their Fort Knox acquisition, kind of something they kind of tried to do. So I'm kind of curious about this one. I'm going to do some more digging on that one. But there you go.
It's going to be AD across all of them. Watch.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. Okay. You can now leverage SFTP support for Azure Blob Storage to build a unified data lake. Because Data Lake screams to me SFTP. SFTP support for Azure Blob Storage is fully managed, highly scalable SFTP service that enables simple, secure, and easy to manage file transfers. And this empowers you to modernize your data transfer workflows and eliminate data silos. The addition of SFTP to Azure Blob Storage allows the object storage platform to expand on the vision of multi-protocol access and enable you to run your SFTP workload with minimal management effort and low infrastructure cost. SFTP support combined with protocol support for NFS 3.0, Blob REST, and Azure Data Lake Storage helps customers migrate their applications without any changes.
That's pretty neat, though, actually. SFTP implementations have been the bane of my life for 15 years. So integrating with object storage is a really super nice way of getting into modernization.
Yeah, I sort of chafe at the idea of that. Oh, no, they want this SFTP to blob for data lakes, because that's not what they want it. They want it to just simplify their SFTP story so they don't have to worry about managing storage behind an SFTP server. That's why you want this, not to enable a data lake, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think
it's to get data into the data lake, right? That is a struggle. And there's only three constants: death, taxes, and someone's going to want to use SFTP.
Don't forget IP whitelisting.
And now what I think is the worst announcement of all of Ignite. There's a new Azure DDoS IP protection SKU for SMBs, similar to the firewall basic we talked about earlier. The key features, of course, of Azure DDoS are massive mitigation capacity and scale, adaptive tuning, attack analytics metrics and logging, integration with Azure Firewall Manager, and integration with Sentinel Defender. And so, just like the basic article earlier, they gave us a handy chart of what's available in the different offerings to help you decipher which one you should use. And this particular one, the reason why I think this is the worst particular feature is that the three things you don't get with the SMB version of DDoS is cost protection, the rapid response support, and the WAF discount. So, yes, you might be able to save some money using this feature until you actually get DDoSed, and then you pay whatever you saved in the amount of traffic that went through your load balancer. Unless, of course, you had that Azure Firewall Basic to limit your throughput to only 250 megabits. So maybe you need to combine both these offerings together to make that a good situation. But this one definitely do the math on this one before you just go for the basic enterprise DDoS protection, in my opinion.
Yeah. What do you get? A notification?
I mean, it basically protects you from known actors that are bad. But if it actually is passing traffic to your system that your system is now auto-scaling to support, you're paying for that auto-scaling. Where the other DDoS offering, they will protect you from paying that money.
Mm-hmm. But to be fair, it's better than nothing.
It is better than nothing for maybe.
Yeah. It's like renting a car. It's like renting a car. Do you want our insurance? No, I'll be fine. Oops.
Yeah. That's a pretty expensive bill if you've auto-scaled or had, a bajillion object blob storage accesses, through egress traffic. Yeah, it's great. And then the last and final set of stories this week is Oracle Cloud World. First year in Vegas, and I could not be bothered to watch any of the Oracle Cloud World videos. And so I went on search of internet and I found a fantastic blog by Eclipse, which is an Oracle partner, and particularly Gustavo Rena Antunes, who wrote a summary of Cloud World for all 3 days. I did not talk about day three because nothing got announced on day three, which he said very clearly in his blog post. So I will now tell you what they announced at Oracle Cloud World day one and day two. So day one, they gave you Oracle Database 23c, because Oracle still hasn't adopted years as a versioning method, and the code name App Simple, which introduces new capabilities that enable breakthrough developer activity for applications that are written using JSON, Graph, or in-database sagas for microservices, while also enhancing SQL to make it even easier to use and adding JavaScript as a stored procedure language. So what could go wrong with JavaScript as a stored procedure language? The other things announced, Oracle Database Zero Data Loss Autonomous Recovery Service based on OCI and on the on-premises Oracle Zero Data Loss Recovery Appliance technology and delivers protection capabilities for Oracle Database services running on OCI. The Oracle Cloud Infrastructure Full Stack Disaster Recovery, which automates the protection and recovery of your applications in OCI. Customers can deploy disaster recovery environments across Oracle Cloud regions without re-architecting existing infrastructure, databases, or applications while eliminating the need for specialized management of or conversion of servers because people like to burn money on Oracle. New Oracle OCI expands app development portfolio with new serverless container and messaging services, autonomous database support for applications, and Oracle talks all about the hybrid cloud with Oracle Alloy and Oracle MySQL Hateway for Microsoft Azure now available to you as well. That was day one. And then day two gave you OCI launching serverless Kubernetes, a new virtual nodes capability for Oracle Container Engine for Kubernetes. And Container Instances Service provides two new serverless compute options for running container-based apps in the cloud in a fast, secure, and reliable way without having to manage any servers, which makes it really easy to not be unbreakable. New container instances, which allow the service, you can easily launch one or more containers with the flexibility to specify compute, shape, resource allocation, networking, and other optional configurations. So this is basically a managed container running service. MySQL HeatWave Lakehouse is aimed at speed and efficiency. PostgreSQL Aries is a new managed Postgres service on Oracle. Privacy Assurance, which is a brand new collection of upgrades for security, compliance, and privacy offering. And then a bit that Oracle public cloud adoption is still only 32% compared to 91% of smartphones, and you should go to smartphones with the new distributed OCI cloud. So there you go. That is Oracle Cloud World, another riveting conference.
Very next gen.
Yeah. I eventually will watch the video just to see how many times they badmouth Amazon, because I'm sure there was at least 50 or 60 mentions of Amazon, but I've not had a chance to do that yet.
Yeah, I can't take OCI seriously until I have customers other than those who just want to rent some hardware for somebody. serious about it.
Or just to run, their existing Oracle product somewhere.
Yeah. Which is fair. I mean, that's a really good niche for them.
They really, right?
Yeah.
Well, that is a very long episode of the show. But in the next week, we'll talk about KubeCon, which is happening as we're recording. Then we're just under a month away from AWS reInvent, which is coming around the corner very, very fast. So
you guys going?
To reInvent? Yeah. I don't think so.
I wasn't going to go, but now I think I have to go.
We were talking about going to a bunker somewhere and just watching it from a bunker, but we haven't figured out bunker details yet.
Yeah, much like Amazon, not really confirming the dates. We haven't really confirmed our plans either.
No, they've confirmed the dates. That's an old note.
Oh, they have?
Okay. Yes. It's official dates.
Okay.
But they have apparently gone cheap, apparently, according to people, because they apparently are not doing a Sunday night Midnight Madness announcement or a party. And they're apparently, they killed the Katanka chicken wing contest. So
people are like,
maybe those were Andy things and Andy's no longer involved. So yeah, I don't know. But we'll see how reInvent goes this year. There's definitely a big event, and I see lots of people chattering about going to their first reInvent this year. So I'm curious to see what they all think. Be interesting.
It's a shame about the Sunday Night Madness thing, because that has traditionally been something kind of cool.
Well, something kind of wacky, right? Like that's where the robot maker thing they did, whatever that music, piano thing was, where it would make piano music for you automatically. Like they've had all kinds of really cool ML weirdness on Sunday nights, which has been kind of fun. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer they're not going to do that this year, but one less thing we have to cover on the show, I guess. I'll take it.
Yeah. Did they kill the replay party, or was that a different party they were?
No, the replay party is still happening. Okay. But the Midnight Madness was like a smaller party. And the big complaint about Midnight Madness was always it was difficult to get into because it was limited attendance. And so a lot of people, like Shaq was a DJ one year at Midnight Madness. We tried to go to it. We couldn't get in. there's been some noise in the past about Midnight Madness being a little bit too small. So maybe they said it was better to kill it and not have people unhappy that they couldn't get into something. And then the Tatanka challenge is actually pretty small too, because it was normally at just one bar at the Venetian and was hard to get into.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I never managed to get in there. I tried several times.
All right, guys. Well, that was a fun show. A lot of great stuff coming out of these, nothing revolutionary, but lots of good stuff for those using Google and Microsoft and Oracle. And we will see you guys next week to talk about KubeCon and any other cloud news.
Sounds good. Good night.
See you later.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
And that is The Week in Cloud. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Foghorn Consulting. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and tweet us your feedback at #TheCloudPod. Or join our Slack channel, go to our website, thecloudpod.net, for sign-up instructions.